Nugs.net is the destination for live music on demand. They have a growing collection of over 15,000 full-length concert recordings from bands like Pearl Jam, Humphreys McGee, Dead & Company, and Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. So you'll never run out of live music to explore.
I've been digging into a lot of Humphreys shows on Nugs.net, and the catalog and the sound quality are really amazing. It's a great way to get to know a band even more.
I've been listening to a lot of Billy Strings, Dead & Company. Oh, and Wilco's on there now, too.
Well, I've been listening to the infamous String Dusters and loving some of the old Steve Kimmock shows on there.
It's available on desktop, iOS, and Android apps. Sonos, that's how I listen, and BlueOS. The Nugs.net team knows you love live music, so they're offering new subscribers a 35% discount on an annual subscription. Go to nugs.net/helpingfriendly and sign up today.
If you already have a subscription, give the gift of live music to a friend. Again, that's nugs.net/helpingfriendly for 35% off an annual subscription. I'm here with Mike Jett, who's at Pure Jett with two T's on Twitter. Mike, you've been here before, I think for the show, a show before the Baker's Dozen, but you've been on the podcast before, so welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here, RJ. Thanks for having me.
And I will say that you safely pulled over on your drive back home from the shows so that you could talk, which is a good thing. That should be maybe a requirement for quick hits. So, thanks. Yeah. You know, safety first.
Yeah, this is a boring drive as well, so it's nice to take a little break from that.
Good. And so you went to both nights?
Actually, just second night.
Okay, just last night. Okay, cool. So you saw a pretty good show. Tell us, I guess, first, just what was the scene like? I assume pretty high energy and people excited to be there. I don't know, what's your take on the pre-show and the lot scene and getting in the venue?
Yeah, I was really impressed. I was a little nervous. You know, there was emails sent out about traffic being bad coming down to the Tri-Fit Center. But so we got there probably around 5:30. I mean, literally pulled right in. Parking lot was right across the street from the venue. Walked across the street. We're there. And it was just such a mellow scene. It was on the SLU campus. It was beautiful. You know, there's like lakes there and people are just walking around. So it was an amazing scene. So that was great. Overall, that initial pre-show experience, there wasn't much of a lot scene. I took it. People were like hanging out in the parking garages there. But the people were walking around having fun. Like you said, it was generally a very positive movie for sure.
Cool. And so what's your thought on just how different it is to go to a summer show indoors and for them to kick off the tour indoors? Did you have any thoughts about that or did it seem just like a normal show?
I mean, I think at first I was a little bummed about it, but, you know, then you start thinking, okay, well, A, it could rain, which it did. It poured probably for the whole first set, so that was good that we were indoors. And then I think for myself, I've seen a lot of, like, every show I've seen lately has been outdoors. Even in the fall, I was at the Ascend Amphitheater in Nashville, so it was nice to get inside, and it's totally different seeing an inside show. So I was fine with it, especially considering I'm going to see a few outdoor shows here coming up this summer, and I think the rest of the tour is outdoors, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, cool. So it was, it did seem like it was a little bit different. So what was your take on the show? I mean, maybe start with the first set and tell us a little bit about your highlights as they kind of ran through. I feel like this, both nights, now that they're mixing in both Ghost of the Forest and Casavant Vox, the set lists are looking a little bit different than what we've been used to, but that's a good thing to me. I'm curious about your take on that and a couple of your highlights from the first set.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like, I listened to the first night and, you know, they played a lot of songs. So I was kind of wondering if they would stick with that theme last night, which in the first set they did, you know, and starting off with Chalk to Us was really strong. Like, that immediately, the crowd was a little late arriving, but as soon as that Chalk to Us kicked off, I mean, it was high energy from the start. Of course, I'm always a fan of a type 2 Chalk to Us, but you can't complain about an opener. And you know, it was an interesting set from that point. There was a lot of songs. And I think midway through the set, the biggest cheer came with Heavy Things, which was interesting. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think maybe they haven't played Heavy Things in a while. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's sort of a little bit out of rotation, at least compared to, you know, the 99, yeah. 2000. But this was the first one since last fall, and they only played it three times in 2018 and twice in 2017. Okay. So, yeah, we're not getting too many of them for sure.
Yeah, so that was interesting. You know, then the other big cheers came randomly, but in my mind I knew, okay, St. Louis must have just scored. Because theme of the Blues game was ever present. There was a lot of people in Blues jerseys. There were cheers, you know, go St. Louis, go Blues, just kind of randomly throughout the crowd. And then just, you know, midway through a song, a cheer would just erupt in the crowd, and you knew St. Louis just scored. And that happened a couple times in the first set. So you're thinking, okay, things are going pretty well for the Blues. I'm not personally a hockey fan, but I'm a sports fan, so I can definitely appreciate, you know, the excitement that must have been. You know, with those local St. Louis residents for sure. So then just to close out the set, I feel like they could have ended the set a couple times with the Funky Bitch. They could have stopped there. Then they ended up going into Antelope, and that just took the energy back up again. So it was almost like nice bookends with the first set with Chalk Dust and Antelope. They really ended and began and ended that set with a lot of energy and got everybody excited for set two.
That's cool. And the set two, I thought it was so cool. The Gloria Loving Cup. And you know, there's a story about Gloria and how it's been sort of like this, you know, turn of fortunes for the St. Louis Blues and, you know, has become meaningful to them. And, that's cool. And then Loving Cup. And I think that was like maybe the longest Loving Cup ever. It's gotta be up there, but a cool jam out of it.
That has to be for sure. It was interesting. I had go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, when they started Gloria, I had no clue what it was, right? I'm not familiar with the Ghost in the Forest songs right now. I haven't listened to any of them. So when they started that song, I'm like, is this what they're going into? And then my buddy was like, no, this is Gloria. And I got listening. I'm like, you're right. You know, when I imagined Gloria in my head, it was the Gloria version. Instead, they were playing the 80s pop version, which is hilarious, you know, and everybody in the room was just grinning ear to ear. Then going into Loving Cup was a surprise, but it fit the tone. I mean, Loving Cup is my favorite closer for sure. And you know, the whole arena was just singing the lyrics. And then when they took off into that jam, I think everybody was pretty floored. And during the jam, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, okay, can we call this a type 2 Loving Cup? You know, is it going to classify that? And I feel like it was, because if you drop into that song and you're listening to it, you wouldn't know it was Loving Cup. So in my mind, that's kind of the definition of type 2. So yeah, I think that was some history that we saw last night.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. You know, this is a whole podcast on its own, and maybe we should do this as a future episode. But, you know, Fish has sort of a history of acknowledging important sporting events as they're happening. There's a few things that come to mind. The Worcester Fall 13 show where Paige announced the score of the Red Sox Cardinals World Series game. There was this 622-94. There was a score update. There's the We Are the Champions thing in San Francisco a few years ago. One interesting thing, I think in 2010, Trey in Chicago congratulated the Blackhawks for beating the Flyers in the Stanley Cup, which is, you know, hockey is like, I think, you know, obviously Trey played hockey and it seems like that's the sport that's closest to his heart. I know Paige is a baseball fan. I'm not sure about Mike or Fishman, but there's like a ton of examples over the years of Fish acknowledging, you know, through music and through talking, kind of what's going on with sports. And I don't know, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool that you were a part of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, once you've seen enough shows, you kind of just really appreciate when you're there for something unique. And I think you could definitely say that what happened last night was unique in Fish history. And you almost feel like you're a part of something bigger. You know, you're in a city that is just abuzz. And at the Fish show, they're acknowledging that as well. So, yeah, it was really, really cool to be there for that. And in the concourses, once the game went final, you could just hear people in the concourses cheering. And it was a wild scene out there, I'm sure. So it was a pretty awesome experience.
That's really cool. And did you, what were some of the second set, you know, highlights for you? Cause there were a couple of pretty big gems, Twist and Light and the Loving Cup. What was sort of your highlight coming out of the second set?
Yeah, definitely the Loving Cup. I thought the transition to Twist was a little jarring, you know, that kind of took me out of it a little bit, but then once they started to jam the Twist, that was really incredible, a little bit different than I've ever heard. I'm a huge Mr. Completely fan. It was my first time ever hearing that. So that was great for me. And I think the jam was awesome. It was almost, I felt like the crowd was a little thrown off by it when they started it. Like, I think I screamed as loud as I could at that point, but the crowd overall didn't. So maybe I was the most excited person in the room for that. And then going into Light, I mean, that was incredible as well. I think that clocked in at the longest, maybe with Twist was the longest jam of the night, but really mellow, just a smooth groove. It was a really, really good second set, and it was very nothing different, which is cool as well. You know, of course, I always want to hear Tweezer, Type 2 Chalk Dust every show I go to, but to get something so different, it was really satisfying. That was a really good experience.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, you know, Mr. Completely, the version from Utah in 2003, that's one of my favorite Phish jams of all time.
Oh yeah, me too.
715. But last night was only the fourth time it's ever been played by Phish, and one of them was, you know, two were in 2017 around before right. and then during Baker's Dozen. So you caught a pretty cool show with a couple of those. Like you said, you know, if you're looking for unique moments, I'm not sure you can get better than a show like this with the antics right. and the music and the jams. What do you think is...
We should also miss it, About to Run. Like, I figured that was a Ghost in the Forest song, and that was really different from most of the stuff that Phish plays, so that was another, you know, pretty unique thing in that show that made it stand out in my mind.
That's cool, yeah. Were you going, like, familiarizing yourself with Ghost of the Forest as it was happening, or no?
A little bit. Like, I kind of understood it was a different sound, and I knew some of the song titles, but I haven't actually listened to any of it yet, sad to say. But from the reaction of the crowd when they started that song, I was like, okay, this has to be Ghost in the Forest. And then I did, you know, peek at Twitter during just to confirm that. But yeah, it was a solid addition to the repertoire for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think is coming? What do you think the rest of this tour is going to look like? Do you, you know, how do you feel after seeing the show last night? What do you think's in store?
I mean, it's exciting. Like, I think they are adding so much new material that, you know, you just never know what you're going to get on any given night. One interesting thing my buddy pointed out this morning, like, they're playing in Toronto next week, right? I don't know if the timing will work out, but the Raptors could have a game 7 to win the NBA title in Toronto. Like, that would just be such a huge coincidence. I don't know if the timing would work out perfect for that, but that would be pretty amazing to have that happen, you know, twice in 2 weeks. The Phish is in a town where a major professional sport championship was won. So that would be kind of cool. But yeah, I'm going to Blossom next week. Looking forward to that. And, you know, they say that the odd years are typically the best Phish year. So I have pretty high hopes for this tour.
Yeah, it does seem, it seems like that theory is holding up, you know, two shows in. But yeah, it does seem like it's, I don't know. Seems like it's working for sure. I'm pretty excited about it. Myself, and I get to see some shows in a couple weeks, so they're going to be pretty warmed up by the time they roll into Camden and I see them. One thing I'd say, just the NBA Finals, the other reference that I remember is 622-94, that amazing show, the OJ show, and that was that was during the NBA Finals, I think Game 5 of the 94 Finals, and they updated the crowd on the, you know, Houston Rockets, New York Knicks score. So, you know, it's just cool. It would be fun if that continued, and then, you know, maybe we'll hear some more stuff later this year, and they can keep the sports things going. That's a good reason to do, you know, to play shows in the fall, I think.
No doubt.
Cool. All right, Mike, thanks for joining. Thanks for taking time out of your drive home, and hope you have a good rest of the day and a good show this weekend. I guess, or when's Blossom?
I appreciate it.
Blossom's next week.
It's Wednesday of next week. So Wednesday, get two week. Wednesday nights in a row, you know, taking a little break from the family and work.
Awesome.
To get out midweek. It's always fun, you know.
Cool. Yeah, what do you want to send people out with in terms of the music? What jam from last night?
I mean, I think we got to go with the Loving Cup. So unique, you know, such a curveball. And like we said earlier, maybe the first ever Type 2 Loving Cup. So I think we got to hear that.
Awesome. All right. Well, have a good rest of the drive. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, RJ. Take care. Okay.
You guys like coffee?
Yes.
I actually cannot function without it.
Luckily for us, we have an advertiser, Passion House Coffee Roasters. Passion House was founded by a longtime fan in Chicago, and they've been sourcing and roasting some of the best beans in the world since 2011.
Now they need your help naming a new coffee, an experimental micro lot from a renowned farm in Colombia. With coffees named Millie Grace, LSD, and Box of Rain, the bar is high for a new name. But we know you can help.
Go to passionhousecoffee.com/Osiris to read about the mystery coffee and submit your idea for the coffee name. While you're there, pick up some beans or cans of cold brew. I had the Passion Cat cold brew cans recently, and they're great. Our listeners get 30% off their coffee, so enter Osiris at checkout. Get after it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.